everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are here on a somewhat overcast Sunday.
It's the gross
what day.
This Sunday Scaries didn't give it away.
Right.
It's a very brown and yucky sort of day. The lack of snow that we've gotten this winter
is alarming.
Yes. Not as bad as last winter, where like it barely went below freezing.
Yeah.
But there was, what little snow we had is gone. So now it's just that brown, dead grass, dead leaves look.
Yeah.
Which makes me appreciate spring even more.
Yes.
Once it arrives for real.
Yeah, because we're getting snow probably the day this is coming out, on Wednesday.
Oh, that'll be good.
Supposedly. I don't know.
Oh, we need to see if the green barn is open so I can get dirt for my greenhouse, or milk jug greenhouses.
Yes.
Because while it's gross outside, it's fun to dream about the garden.
Yes. You really do like starting plants and everything.
Yeah.
Right around the, well, actually before this time, but hey.
It should have been before.
It's so, called trauma. So, and, and we're subjected to it every day.
And the, yeah. It just sort of flew my mind. Like, part of me knew it was time to start rosemary and celery.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I just checked their website. For everyone listening, it's our local garden place that my family has been going to for four generations. I'm the fourth generation to buy shit from there.
Yeah.
So, they're, according to their website, still closed for the season.
Oh, boo.
I know. I feel they were open earlier. Anyway, this is very localized talk that no one's going to appreciate.
But I have native pollinator seeds that need a winter experience. So they'll go out in a milk jug that is cut in half and filled with dirt and the seeds sprinkled on top. So I'd like to do a few of those for cardinal flowers, some sedges, because as one of the watershed people I know pointed out, not only do pollinators need the food sources, but it's nice to have some place for them to go to land and to hide.
Yeah.
So I got some funky bracted sedge. I forgot what type of bracted it is, but I got one of those. And I just keep ordering stuff.
Yeah, I let you manage the seeds and stuff. Like, I help out outside, but you're really the planner of everything.
And by planner, you're like, or I'm like, hey, I have this. I don't have room for it at my place. Let's put it at yours.
Like,
here's an open spot.
And I'll be like, I'll offer practical advice where I'm like, I think this is getting too crowded out. Or why the fuck are we trying broccoli for the fourth year in a row when we get nothing from it?
I know.
Or Brussels sprouts.
I was so hopeful.
Those failed so badly last year.
Yeah.
Like, we just got big stalks.
And like little nubbins that were not worth harvesting.
Yeah.
So the brassicas, maybe not so much. Although I at Good Sisters, it's the kale is out of control.
Yes.
Which is fine. Good and source of fiber.
Something else we're doing to supplement is also joining a CSA this year, because I don't trust this country and its plan for tariffs. And it's support of farmers that they seem to be yanking. So we're joining a CSA, which means that farmers get paid in advance.
Yes, it's community-supported agriculture. So that way you as the consumer share the risk that the farmer would otherwise bear solo. So if it's a great year, you get a great bounty. If it's a terrible year, you and the farmer share in the terribleness. Like, it's a bit more equitable of a situation. And there's a lot of great ones around the Twin Cities.
Yes. And I found one really near my work that everyone I talk to, I'm like, I'm thinking about joining the CSA. And they're like, oh, well, I did this one. And I'm like, that's the exact one we're considering. So.
And they have an egg add-on.
Which is huge.
Yeah, these days. Do they have a meat add-on too?
Yeah, but we're not going for that because
we're at the butcher shop.
Yeah, or on my campus, there's
the U of M meat and cheese.
Yeah, meat and dairy sales room.
Yeah, which the honey lavender ice cream you got from there is so good.
Yeah.
We haven't had any this weekend because I made a princess torta for you.
Yes, a birthday cake.
Yes, it's layers of chiffon cake with raspberry jam, that I de-seeded
mm.
Because there it was very, seeds of plenty. And creme diplomat, and then whipped mascarpone covered in marzipan.
It's so good.
Doesn't look like much,
but it tastes very good.
But it, yeah.
Let's see. What have you been reading? You got a big delivery this week, and it was a crowdfunding thing. And sometimes those waits seem like forever.
It's true. It was the Farscape 25th anniversary package. So, there's a little cloth patch to add to things. There's a pin of the IAS, the Farscape logo.
Mm.
There's a comic of like new stories, one of which I'm just in love with, involving Zan, who is one of my favorite characters. And both volumes of the comics in omnibus form.
Yeah.
So I started reading it. I made it through the first arc. It takes place after the Peacekeeper Wars movie.
Mm.
So it was great. Comics, comic. Oh, and there's some metal bookmarks in there too.
And a signed photo.
And a signed photo. It's got Ben Browder on it.
Yes. Punk.
And oh no, Lanny Tupu, the Crace, who also does the voice of Pilot, who is also one of my favorite characters, and operated from Jim Henson Studios.
Yeah.
So Pilot and Rigel, plus assorted other aliens. But I just love Pilot.
And this is your first deep dive into any sort of omnibus for a while.
It's true. Yeah.
Even though we are surrounded by them in the living room.
It's true. It's, a lot of them haven't even been unwrapped.
I learned my lesson. It's easier to dust when they're still shrink wrapped. And then that way, if I change my mind later, like if they're out of print, you can get a pretty penny for some of them on eBay. And you get more if they're brand new and in the shrink wrap than unwrapped, even if you've never opened them. Oh. So
yeah, a lot of Farscape comics. It was a Flash Gordon week.
Mm.
So Defenders of the Earth and Flash Gordon arrived at the local comic book shop.
Mm-hmm. It was a big week for me.
You had a lot of DC stuff. I had a lighter week. I think it was just Star Trek.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm still trying to catch up, like, with our Disney World trip and the country being as it is. Sometimes I don't feel like reading current comics, so I'm getting through my backlog, slowly chipping away. So I'm current with X titles now.
Oh, yeah.
The ones I pull. And I'm getting there with DC.
Yeah.
And something that I found is it's a lot easier for me to read like two or three plus issues of the same title because month to month I sort of forget what's happening.
Yeah, so that's real.
It's nice to be able to read a chunk of issues so you're sort of up to date on what's going on. So at least even if you've forgotten, you'll catch up and still be able to make progress through. So next week, I think, is another heavy week. It's interesting. I pull more DC than Marvel now. Yeah. And your Marvel pull list is pretty down as well.
I think it's just... X-Men isn't even on my pull list. I've just been grabbing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot to pull, I think, X-Force and X-Factor once or twice.
Oh.
And I think I might have a Nyx gap. But some of those are ending.
They're not on your pull list. It's just like, hey, when they come out, I'll grab them. And then you didn't grab a couple issues. So now you need to figure out which ones you need.
And I dropped Phoenix.
Yeah.
So I'm doing more indie comics, oddly.
Yeah, I have sort of pivoted my tastes as well. After Krakoa, it became apparent you don't need to read everything. And reading everything during the Krakoa era felt punishing in terms of trying to keep up and understand what's going on. And it cost a lot of money. And I wasn't enjoying all of those titles. Some of them, yes. But heading into the new X titles, I really looked at things and I'm like, find your bliss. Like, go after the characters that you want to read. If Wolverine is involved, I'm not really reading it other than Uncanny X-Men, because, for example, that's a character that
is everywhere.
Is everywhere, and I'm really tired of him. And I've been tired of him since the 90s. So just really looking at what is bringing me joy. What do I want to spend money on? Because if you think about it, you're spending $4, in some cases $5 per month on one single issue. So
yeah,
you invest in something, because if you compare that, well, two issues of a comic equals like a month of Netflix or something like that.
Yeah.
So you have to look at the value you're getting. Plus we have Marvel Unlimited, which is something we can always say, okay, it looks like it sort of might be fun, but I don't know if I'll really enjoy it. You can read it on Marvel Unlimited in a few months as part of the subscription, which is what I'm doing with some of the current Star Wars comics.
And at least for events, like I made a partway through King in Black, that it goes chronologically and sequentially. Like some of them are only tangentially related to that tie-in, but at least it covers all the different issues. So things like Dark Web, you can go back and read and it'll line up all the different titles.
Yes.
So theoretically it'll all make sense.
I really appreciated that change they made in the past year or so for events, where you could actually read an event. The biggest thing, because I almost got a few omnibuses, it's four omnibuses.
Whoa.
For the Clone Saga of Spider-Man from the 90s, which we know our friend Scott Free loves the Clone Saga.
Yeah.
And is preparing to launch
the Clone Conspiracy.
Yes, all about it. But I didn't know if I wanted to commit to four omnibuses. You can read it sequentially on Marvel Unlimited.
Nice.
Between all the titles, because it gets really confusing if you have to back out and then find the next one.
Yeah.
In a different. Yeah. I can't play that game digitally. It's confusing.
Yeah.
Speaking of Alpha Flight, though, and X-Men, they were in the most recent X-Men issue.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you thought about it.
I liked it. I thought it did a good job catching readers up of what Alpha Flight did and minimizing the footnote of go back to read Alpha Flight Volume 5 from 2023.
Right.
When it was post-Krakoa, and I can't believe it was already 2023 that series launched. That's crazy.
Like, except for one thing at work, I've been good about like doing the dates as 25s instead of 24s, except for, you know, formal documents that I have to cross out and redo the numbering on. But yeah, 2 years ago.
And so we saw that the core team, not the ones that are still on the lam, but the ones that were caught,
yes,
all in jail.
And then Marina, who was just like, this is my team.
Yes. Which
I don't know how she.
I think I sent it to you. Okay. Small sidebar before we get to what she did.
Is it a sandbar because it's ocean related?
It's for my research for the book, which is also another crazy thing. I'm within spitting distance of getting everything written up. I'm within 20 issues of the end of volume one right now, but I've done research and I've gotten a few secondary sources that are really hard to track down, including John Byrne interviews from when he was going to launch the series. And it's actually Marina.
What?
Not Marina.
Marina. I mean, other characters had that name, like the character from The Magicians.
He like specifically went through and he is like, this is how you pronounce it.
Is that the same interview where he's like, Puck is a hockey puck and not the Shakespeare character?
Yes. It's Marina. I'm showing Philip a picture of the article right now.
Like Mariner. Like Submariner. Marina.
No. It's a long
Marine.
It's a long I. It's not like Submariner. It's Marina.
Oh, whereas Submariner is different.
Yes. So
Marina.
Like so
where you dock your boat?
Yeah. Which, why put two R's? Why are you confusing us, John Byrne?
I mean, maybe it's the John Byrne equivalent of the 90s with the Y's instead of I's or the K's.
Yeah.
Chaos.
So in the most recent issue of X-Men, Marina gave herself up because she's like, I feel I should just be with my team.
Yeah.
And I have not read the chronology of everything since the end of volume one of Alpha Flight. How'd she come back? She was real dead.
Yeah.
She real dead. We'll get to it.
I mean,
within this calendar year, you will get to where she is just dead.
Don't we blame Namor for that?
You'll see.
I feel like it's his fault. But yeah, I'm glad that she's back. I feel like there's got to be some sort of like alien technology that goes on, since she's so, that alien species is seems very tough.
The Plodex.
Yeah, like they wouldn't let death stop one of their people.
So I'm really hoping this is a launching point for something with the team. Like, come on.
It could be, and I feel like there's enough references of like, Shaman isn't participating. He's a conscientious observer.
Yes.
We're going to have to work on him to get him involved in the team again.
Yeah.
Like,
and Heather, I wrote into their letters column after I read that issue. And I was like, you need to continue this. Like, we need to know what's the outcome of Heather still being in a coma.
Right.
What's going on?
With the Nemesis Blade.
Yeah. So, all right, should we launch into these three issues?
Yeah.
Okay. I, as always, have write-ups. You stop me when you want to interject something. So, first off, we have issue 23 entitled Night of the Beast from June 1985. John Byrne is our writer and artist. Inks are split between Bob Wycheck and Keith Williams. Coloring is by Andy Yankus. Letterer, Rick Parker. And our editor, of course, is Denny O'Neill. Snowbird is being tortured by the gods, who say she has not fulfilled her mission of defeating the great beasts. Defeating the great beast as one remains on Earth. It's Sasquatch, who is inhabited by Tanarak.
Yeah, so she, like, this opening page is her in raggedy clothes, like visibly lashed by these spiky carrots that Hodiak and Nelvana are growing up from around her to punish her. And she's like, I've done everything. Like, why are you doing this to me?
And they're like, do your job.
Yeah. And like the shaper will show you who you're missing. And it's Sasquatch, and she says, no, no, and she wakes up.
It's Doug Thompson's house. She's sleeping on the couch, and she doesn't really know how she got there.
Yeah, apparently this has been happening for a while, and she's in bad shape. So she's like, what do I do? Like, do I kill a teammate? I have to, since it's my purpose on Earth. My mother and grandfather are telling me to do it.
Yeah, she's like, well, yes, I don't have a choice. Gonna kill a friend.
Yeah.
So then we get sort of a training montage of Talisman and Puck. They're wrestling together in the gym of Walter's condo complex.
Residents only.
Yes.
On the sign.
Walter comes over as they leave and talks about Heather maybe seeing Mac.
Yeah.
Heather, still overcome with emotion from that event, is asleep in his condo. So, like, she went to Walter super traumatized and is like, this is what I saw.
Well, they were going out to the west coast of Canada anyway for the new base.
Yes. So he sort of, like, tucked her in and was like, you're in shock.
As the
only fell on the sidewalk. You biffed it.
As the only one with a residence in this city. Yeah.
And then Aurora sort of breaks this up by running up and saying that downtown is being attacked.
By a supervillain.
So then we cut to downtown Vancouver.
A genuine supervillain, and it's Calibur.
Calibur, what does Calibur look like?
You can tell it's before the 80s or before the 90s because it's not Calibur with a K.
Yes,
it's Calibur how it's actually spelled.
Spelled some places like America.
Oh yeah, some do re instead of er.
Yes.
But he, it's a lot of technology, and I like how he's described at one point as poor man's Iron Man. Which seems legit.
So we have Talisman, Puck, Sasquatch, and Aurora in this battle.
Yeah.
So in the course of the battle, though, Calibur, even though he sucks, definitely shot an injured Sasquatch.
He's like, oh, I felt that.
And he tries to wander away, and Snowbird emerges from the sky, transforms into an owl, and tries to kill him. So really insult to injury.
I mean, we should point out that Caliber is defeated without Sasquatch's help. Like, he is tending his shoulder, or for the most part, without Sasquatch. Puck is dodging. Talisman is also doing something with green magics. And Aurora comes in and blinds the dude. So then Sasquatch takes him out with one punch and is like, oh, I need some time alone. And yeah,
So,
when Snowbird arrives, Puck is even like, why is it so dark out? Like, the cloud, like, it's very ominous
okay.
what's happening.
Yeah.
And then the attack.
So Aurora tries to pry Snowbird Owl off,
Yes.
but Sasquatch bats them both away.
Yeah.
So at this point, Tanarak is fully in control of Sasquatch and it attacks Aurora.
Yeah, I give thee thanks for thine assistance, mortal female. Thou hast earned a reward from me. It shall be the boon of a quick and merciful death. And she augmented her outfit with a blue scarf, which I don't hate, but also very unnecessary. And it's sort of what he is grabbing. And Talisman is like, she's working to level herself up to be
Yes.
a full member of the team.
As she tries to blast Tanarak, but the blast is deflected right back at her.
Yeah.
And the battle sort of goes back and forth.
And she's like, you would be
There.
able to defeat me, except I'm strong.
Yeah, so Snowbird is explaining what's going on to Puck.
Yeah, that the radiation experiment so far north didn't actually work the way that everyone thought that it did with Lankowski. He just punched a hole in the barrier between this world and the great beasts. So he transposed with Tanarak's form and he was able to control it. But Tanarak has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yes, so each time that he transformed into Sasquatch, it was just opening that door a little bit more to Tanarak. Like
Yeah.
we're widening that gateway enough until he can come through. Or they. Tanarak is probably all these gods are probably gender neutral.
Right.
Except Nelvana, who was definitely a female because she gave birth to Snowbird.
Right.
I guess. Maybe male gods can do that. Zeus.
I mean,
You
Athena
have
just burst from his head.
yes.
So Puck is like, incredible, but what can we do to stop this Tanarak? Talon's about on her last legs, and there's a close up to Snowbird's eye with a little red skull in it. She is out for death.
So Aurora transforms herself into a white Sasquatch.
You mean Snowbird?
Yep. Hey, we found a typo in my book. Great job, everyone.
What? Oh. Yeah, it's true. And I like how Snowbird is narrating this transformation. Even though Walter is no native of the North, the creature he created, the hybrid melding of himself and Tanarak, was. So that's how she's able to be also a Sasquatch. And they battle it out.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't defeat me. You are a halfling. And she's like, but I'm so strong. And there's like walls of cement. There's a car that's hurled. And sort of, if anyone is going to die, it's you. And he's like, ha ha ha. You are less than a babe, Snowbird. You do not have the heart for such matters. Speaking of heart, Snowbird rips it out of him.
Yeah, just Temple of Doom's
Shock.
it.
Yeah. And he instantly transforms back into Walter. And Aurora's pissed. She throws herself onto the body of Walter
And
Lankowski.
then Snowbird is like, well, his soul like still exists somewhere, but we're gonna need to go on a quest to find
Yes.
it.
To
So
destroy the beast, it was necessary to destroy the physical form. And Puck was picking up what Snowbird was laying down. He's like, are you picking your words as carefully as I hope you are, Snowbird? You said it was necessary to destroy his physical form. And Aurora's like, I want my man back. And there's all the ominous words of like, do you know what you're asking for? It's going to be very perilous, but we can do it. We must go to the kingdom of the beasts.
so And our letters page, this is actually a reprint of the prior issue's letters page.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Straight up reprint. So what did you think? Before we go on, so this is issue 23, and another core member is gone.
I was sort of shocked by how much death there has been. I do appreciate leveling up Snowbird.
Yeah.
Like, to being so badass.
Yeah.
I think people are like, oh, she flies. She's a lady. She has a funny headdress.
She has a dumb headpiece. Let's demand a martini. Dumb headpiece.
But she's super strong. She's super smart and apparently has no trouble ripping out people's hearts.
And Demanda actually does some cosplay.
As Snowbird. Yeah. Yes. But does she have a heart in her hand?
We could level up that cosplay real easily.
Hey, Demanda, we ordered you a heart.
From Spirit Halloween.
Yeah.
The first time I read this issue, I was like, wow. Walter Lankowski gone. And if you recall back in some of the letters issues, Sasquatch is sort of a fan favorite.
Oh, yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, we have this episode, we go through issue 25.
Uh-huh.
The next Alpha Flight episode, I think it would make sense for us to finish the Bird Run.
How many issues is that?
It's like 3 or 4.
Oh, that's not bad.
No. His last issue is 28, I believe. Yeah. And yes, last issue is 28. So we will get to the end of Burns Run, and then we will get sort of the bridge to Mantlo. Mantlo writes, we have to read, this is going to sound weird, an Incredible Hulk issue before we read issue 29.
Really?
Yes, it makes sense. There's a reason why I slot things the way I do with how we read stuff. It's necessary to get the full story. So we only have one episode left of Burn. You can sort of tell that Burn is trying to find stuff. Like,
didn't you say that in some interview he had said like he was done with the characters?
He's
like
very done.
He did what he wanted to with them.
And he kept having to write it.
No.
And he's like, he had a few ideas. So like he's pulling on a few ideas to make them full issues.
Right, like finishing out the Great Beasts for Snowbird.
Exactly.
Their big bad that they've had.
You can tell that he is running short. It's not like the first 12 where you have those backup stories that really flesh out stuff. This is very much story-driven rather than character-driven at this point.
Yeah.
Where it's taking another piece off the board, which is interesting. Where Sasquatch dead? And Burn doesn't finish this quest out. It's actually Bill Mantlo.
Oh, with the Walter Lankowski.
Yes, stuff. Finding the soul thing.
Oh. Because in this issue, I really liked it.
All right.
It was one of those Descent to the Underworld situations.
So you are referencing issue 24, entitled Final Conflict, from July 1985. John Byrne is our writer and artist. Inks are done solely by Bob Wyachek. Coloring, Andy Yankus. Letterer, Rick Parker. And Denny O'Neill is still our editor.
So, also fun fact, I think it was PBS Terra or something, one of their digital studios things, I was talking about the Canadian Shield, which is this, like, moose antler-shaped thing across most of the continent, of how it's the oldest bedrock on the planet.
Interesting.
Like, it's just been scraped and scraped to the base layer, so like the oldest rock on the planet. And then so like the soil is super thin, and that all the population, all the industry and stuff is sort of like down below the shield. But that was really interesting. I shouldn't say that there's been indigenous peoples living up above forever. But the denser populated areas are to the south. And so when you get to this page, this for Final Conflict with the Eye of the World, it sort of makes sense of why it's like old bedrock.
Yeah.
Like a moonscape. And then that's when they say like Oh, this place is incredible. I feel like I'm on the moon.
And this is issue 24. It's a double-sized anniversary issue.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I just kept reading it because I thought it was good.
Yeah. So, as you said, they are at the... Where?
The Eye of the World.
There we go. Eye of the World.
Because it's like, oh, that's a Wheel of Time reference. Har, har, har.
The Eye of the World will recur in this book. Don't you worry. We will come back to the Eye of the World several times.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're trying to find Walter Lankowski's soul. Aurora is so bereft with grief.
Oh, yeah. And
and blames Snowbird, which, you know, she is technically responsible.
I mean, there's a bit of a reveal, like Walter's body has been crystallized and it's just floating there.
Look what we brought.
And in the top panel, Aurora's just like, again, thrown herself upon his body. So she goes off and Heather's like, calm down. You know what had to happen. Snowbird did what was necessary to save you all. And Aurora's like, necessary? Necessary? Is this necessary? With a dramatic flourish to show off Walter's body.
So Shaman is here as our North, as his North Star, and he says that Talisman used her powers to not only request but compel all Alpha Flight members to appear for this mission.
And she's like, sorry, I didn't mean to put so much oomph into it.
she was like, I wish they'd be here, and then they had to be there.
Yeah,
basically, like,
it wasn't like, hey, we need your help.
Yeah.
It was, come here.
Yeah.
And it was for anyone in Alpha Flight. So that's why North Star sort of got wrapped up into it.
Yeah.
And he arrives and she clocks him.
Well, North Star assumes that Aurora summoned him. He's like, oh,
that's true.
My sister wanted me to be here. And she's like, absolutely not. I did not want you to be here. Just socks him.
Yeah. Like, he hasn't even landed yet.
Yeah. So North Star is like, I guess she didn't want me here, so why should I be here?
So I'm about to go.
Yeah. So Snowbird then uses her own power to compel him to stay against his will.
She's like, a moment, North Star, and he's got like the twang expression on his face and his eyes get real wide. And she's like, I haven't told anyone, but part of my powers are I can compel anyone to aid me in my mystical quest, even if they don't do so willingly.
So everyone is then transported from the Eye of the World to the Shattered Lands, except Heather. Heather, they realize, you don't have powers. We don't know what we're going to face. Just watch Walter's body.
Like, yeah.
Make sure that nothing eats it, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, but it's crystal.
I don't know if there are crystal monsters there. Do you?
Oh, maybe.
Exactly.
Where's the fun stuff of, like, why it's so pretty naturally cold? It's older than than humanity on the planet. Like, there's some dialogue in here about how this is the place it has to be.
So, the Shattered Lands, this is where the great beasts originated. And after they killed all the inhabitants, then they moved on to Earth. So the great beasts sort of used up all the natural resources of the Shattered Lands. And then they're like, we need food again. So how about this Earth place? But this is also where the old gods imprisoned the great beasts after they defeated them the first time.
Yeah. And we got a bit of dialogue where one of the great beasts was able to create a vortex of energies and so turn back some of that energy against the elder gods. So that's why Nelvana and Hodiak are similarly imprisoned elsewhere, because one of the great beasts was like, whatever you do to us, I do to you too. So they are each sort of banished.
The old gods should have done no take backsies or something.
So Shaman pulls out the key. I'm sorry, the great key from his bag. And they have
capital letters.
I mean, everything is in caps, but it should be.
The great key trademark.
Yeah. And like the art sort of is cool. Things get super pencil sketchy. And you can tell that the team is sort of disappearing off into the distance and leaving Heather. And that's where they get the, hey, you're our leader, but you also have no power, so stay put.
And you know this is like a giant size issue because there are chapters.
Yeah. And we get this like journey through the barrier, which is super cool. Like all these sort of like stay together, keep your mind flexible, but ready your heart and your soul. Bend, but do not break. And they go through all these really cool temporal zones, other realities. I thought that the art did a fun job. Like this funky robot things in the barrier.
So
the team is being shot like torpedoes out of a starship.
So is this journey more fun, or is Donna Summer's journey to the center of your heart more fun?
Do I recognize that song? Is that on the radio album?
I don't know. It's from the Bad Girls album.
Oh, so it might not be on the one that I have.
Maybe. We'll expose it. Maybe you should reread this issue while listening to Journey to the Center of Your Heart on repeat.
I was just happy I got the people at the gym to have Madonna music on instead of just like the same punk classic rock mixes. And it was great, except for one slow song at the end. But I also wanted like a super campy gym mix of Donna Summer and ABBA and things like that.
Yeah.
So they go through and it's super cool. Like this world is so depleted of everything. There's no color even.
Yeah.
And at first, I would like to think that that was a choice not to color it.
Yeah.
Rather than we ran out of time.
Andy Yankus would not. I have his color guide for the Gilded Lily issue. He knows how to do his job. And it's funny, like even on the pages you're looking at where the chapter is in red.
Yeah, and the team is in color. So yes. Like that's what makes me think it was that it's a very particular choice.
Yes.
But also the level of detail in the penciling of the Shattered Lands. The detail of the penciling would be lost in the coloring, I feel. So it's a nice touch.
Yeah, that's very delicate inks by Bob Wyachek.
Yeah.
So the team then splits up because, you know, in any good horror situation, you gotta split up.
Yeah.
Talisman, Shaman, and Puck are the ground team. And then Snowbird, Aurora, North Star are in the air to zoom around.
They're the flyers. They're scouting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at best, Snowbird's like, at best, we'll find them. And at least we'll find some hint as to where they are.
So they're like, where's the soul? Walter's soul. Hello. Is anybody
in here somewhere? And but this dude wakes up.
His name is Salmon?
Solman.
Solman?
S-O-M-O-N.
I was pronouncing the O as differently. I don't know.
Yeah. So
if done correctly in the book, hey, tally one for me.
You are most welcome here, as meat is welcome to the house of the starving man. And they sort of go off on this horned spiky dude.
So he controlled the great beasts. He's the little puppet master.
The artificer. He created the whole world after it was, you know, stripped of all its materials.
Yes. And he makes some of them appear. So we get Tundra.
Yeah.
An extra dimensional Tundra.
He's back.
We get Kariuk, the Corruptor, and Tolemok, the Fire Beast.
Yeah. Kariuk has had better days.
The spell check as I typed up all of this shit just went wild.
Do you just need to turn off autocorrect?
I have to teach it words. I had to teach it North Star the other day. After like a solid 200 pages I've written with North Star, all of a sudden it took issue with how you spell North Star.
That's weird.
It's like two words? And I'm like, no.
So the ground team starts running and then we get chapter 4, The Outsider.
So
Heather's narrating.
I love this. She has a mini tape recorder.
It's like one of those note to self things.
Yes.
And so it's just her and Walter's crystallized corpse just floating there. And Box arrives.
It's Roger Box in Box.
He is like, Mrs. Hudson, hello, how are you? Why am I here?
Talisman.
So Talisman's call included Box, which was super cool. Yeah. I thought that was a nice, like, she put it out there, not calling Alpha Flight, not really knowing who all was a part of Alpha Flight, and it includes Roger Box.
Not Marina.
I don't know where she's at. Isn't she with Namor?
She's with Namor currently.
Well, it's a lot of ocean. She swims fast, but
a lot of, I'm making the sign for sex. There's a finger and a fist involved.
But he sort of interrupts this inner monologue where she was reflecting on seeing Mac, and the frustration of not being able to reach her team, and how it's cold. But it's not just cold because of the weather. It's cold because magic. So,
and then
he's like, Mrs. Hudson, why is that statue of Walter Lankowski crumbling?
It's flaking.
That crystal is
chipping away,
losing structural integrity.
Sort of bad that his body, even crystallized, not holding itself together.
No. Chapter 5.
We're back in the Shattered Lands.
The battle begins, and Aurora and Northstar are distracting Tundra. The flames are after the ground team, and the shaman's like, there's not a whole lot that I can do. Like, I can do stopgap measures, but only if we have time to breathe, and those won't be effective. So he quickly does something. He conjures ice spears from his bag, and the corruptor's like, ice, the preserver, my ancient enemy. And the flames are like, I got you, boo, and melts the ice, but at least it gives a little bit more time for the ground team to run away.
Yeah. Snowbird is left alone with Soman.
He's monologuing.
He's a villain who loves a monologue. He tries to cage her.
It's true. And a little bit of sexism. I am right, am I not, female? Even you have hidden fires, ancient fires. And I do like her. She's like, I've got depths. You have the power to look beyond this human shape I wear, Soman. Do so, if you dare, upon the true flame of my halfling soul. And this is the second reference I feel like we've gotten to, like...
Halfling?
No, to Snowbird's true form. And, like, her... The dumb headpiece is only an outer projection.
Yes.
I feel like someone went in... Did they go insane when they saw her true self? Or is one of those, like... Be thankful that you can't see my true self because
it's that because she was with like Doug Thompson and then she turned like to camera and she's like red eyes.
Yes.
That's what we saw previously.
It was a very Galadriel moment of like
Galadriel or the end of the Thriller music video when Michael Jackson is like, I'm still a werewolf zombie bitch as Vincent Price laughs. But yes.
Great, because I didn't get that all of that reference.
We will watch the 13-minute music video for Thriller at some point.
Sounds exhausting.
It's actually really good.
No. Also, almost as exhausting as the 30-turn Mario Party we played so that we could unlock some achievements and unlock a new board.
Which we're playing after this. I'm like, we both had breakfast. We need to record now while synapses are firing.
While the coffee is still coursing through our veins.
Yes. So she
escapes her imprisonment.
Bear form.
Yes, as a bear.
Polar bear form.
Yeah, and for the second time, they're like, Snowbird, you're so young.
Baby, you're a baby.
But watch, I can do all these things. I created this city. I create this cage. And she's like, bitch, no, you didn't.
Well, I can destroy this cage is what I can do.
You underestimate the strength of Snowbird.
And this is where Soman is really sort of sucky as a villain because he gets overpowered. She takes it to him.
I mean, she is a gigantic polar bear, to be fair. So, and he just like lands on him.
And he has to use his mind powers to coordinate the great beast, but he loses his concentration. And then they just start attacking one another.
Then the corruptor is like, Tundra, I love you. I'm going to hug you in my corruption. And apparently they just don't like each other. And then the flames are doing something. I think they get in on the action.
They're
too.
Just very busy off in their own thing. The rest of Alpha Flight goes to Snowbird and are like, girl, you can't kill him. We need to find Walter's soul. Please.
And
please
it's weird. Don't. Shaman says Soman is the most powerful of the beasts, but he's also the most mortal. If he is destroyed, we may never find Lankowski's soul. So that's why Shaman gets Snowbird to relinquish the bear form.
They're like, listen here, you dick.
And he's like,
where is the soul? And he's like, well, it's something called called the Well of Sorrows.
It's where we put all the souls of the people who used to live here before we invaded and consumed everything.
And he's like, okay, there's a little formula here that we need to follow. First, we need someone who loved Walter. We need someone who hated Walter. And we need a powerful magic wielder all to descend together, okay? So talk amongst yourselves, figure out who.
And Puck is like, well, we know Aurora loved him, but who hates him? And Aurora's like, hello, my brother.
Yes.
And
I forget where I read it. It is somewhere in one of the interviews that I read recently. I'm going to include it in the book because I was just doing my initial read, where it's very much both of them loved Walter. And they both deal with his death in a different way.
Northstar, you mean?
Yep.
Oh.
You can read a lot of queer subtext in how he deals with Walter and Aurora.
Oh.
That he is jealous that Aurora is with Walter and he is not.
Oh.
You can.
Interesting.
Take another pass through these issues sometimes and their interactions. It's there. And it's actually intentional.
Maybe that's why his sort of blustering, no, I do not. I mean, this is absurd. I refuse to involve myself in this foolishness. And Snowbird is like, don't forget, I've compelled you. You have to help.
So we have those two and then Talisman. Because she's super powerful in magic.
So they go down the stairs. Aurora's light powers aren't even helpful in the darkness.
It's just super dark, and Talisman senses Soman, and he appears and then stabs all three of them in the stomach with claws on his outsized hand. He's like, ha ha,
those nails are ragged AF.
yeah, he,
and that's what he uses.
Amanda knows a really good nail person. I think that she needs to refer Soman.
Yeah,
maybe she'll get a discount. We should get her. I'll let her know.
So Snowbird feels their pain. She's like, we have been betrayed. The old beast lied to us. And he's like, well, I just didn't give you all of the truth. So she's like,
she kills the fuck out of him.
It's the same punishment as if you had lied to us. And she just throws her hand through his chest.
And the shaman uses a spell to retrieve the three to the surface.
And they're dead.
Yeah, they're victims of psychic death. And the only person that could help them, Talisman, is one of the victims.
Yeah.
But there's a little orb action here.
So it's like a big, they describe the Well of Sorrows as being beneath this big snow globe.
Mm-hmm.
And the globe turns colors and some lightning flashes down and the team is fine. They're alive. But how?
And the orb that helped revive them is actually Walter's soul.
Yeah.
And he expended a lot of his energy in helping them out.
So it was like a giant chandelier,
mm-hmm,
snow globe situation. And then Shaman gets like a little stick to retrieve it from the ceiling. And it's like a beach ball.
Just pushing it.
Yeah. So they leave.
Shaman is like, okay, we have seconds. 4 minutes left. We need to go to the surface again.
Right. Without Soman, the Shattered Lands are falling apart.
They're flaking.
Speaking of, they get there and Heather's like, we did it, but where's his body? And Heather's like, it's here. I don't know what happened, but he crumbled. Like,
Cher Walter or something, I imagine. I'm not reading this from the page, but that's what she probably is exclaiming.
She did say Saprist before, okay, but not this time. She says, what can we do? We must be able to reform him or something. And Shaman's like, well, if he didn't spend so much of his soul to revive you, we could have. But, oh, hey, Box, what are you doing here? And they're like, your living metal might be enough to sustain his soul, at least temporarily. But what about your telepathic control? And Box sort of reveals, oh, there's none. Like, it's me inside. I can phase out. Just someone catch me. So Northstar saves Roger. Shaman puts the soul into the Box robot. And Roar's like, Walter, Sherry, you are alive. And Snowbird's like, my purpose is fulfilled. Like, I've killed all the great
beasts. I love this. Snowbird's like, so I'm sort of done here on Earth. So, bye.
I can visit my parents since they were whipping and lashing me with flames.
Yeah.
I want to go spend time with them.
Mm.
So we get an epilogue, the human factor.
So Heather is going to Doug Thompson.
I love this look of her on his couch.
Which, throughout the book, it's really hard just to write Doug. So I always type his full name. Doug Thompson.
Oh.
Doug Thompson. And she's like, listen, so you know the three-year-old you were in love with? Well, she's gone. So sorry to be the bearer of bad news. And he's like, ah, shucks. Well, thanks for letting me know. And Heather's like, okay, bye.
And Narya is there. She takes off her dumb headpiece and she's like, I have much to learn about my human side. Teach me to be human, my love. Teach me to be a woman. It's like
John Byrne strikes again.
No, thank you. But I do want to talk about Heather in this panel with she's wearing her sunglasses inside.
Yes.
She's drinking tea. She's got like this bomber jacket thing and the high boots. Like
colors. Tell me about this color combo.
She's got a green turtleneck, the blue jacket with like a cream fur fleece around the collar, purple pants, like plum purple, bright plum, and then the blue boots to match the jacket. But the Bret Hart sunglasses just kill me.
Andy Yankus went fucking wild with this coloring. And something I did want to bring up, since I'm bringing up his coloring, remember in the Gilded Lily issue where you're like, the color is between the golds and everything. Like, this is really good.
Yeah, this is a lot of greens.
Super intentional. Like, I'll show you the pages.
Mm.
It's even down to the color gradations in Gilded Lily's white cloak and how there's like blues.
Oh, yeah.
For shadow. So good. Like, colorists don't get enough credit for what they bring to the page.
I mean, they bring some, he brought some chartreuse to Doug Thompson's house.
Yes.
He styled that house like 10 years before this came out and never updated the paint color.
Mm. All right. So the letters page, most of this month's letter column is taken up with effusive praise for Aurora.
Oh, good for her.
With only one writer bemoaning her new hairstyle.
Oh.
So the way that she's transformed seems to have resonated with readers, and they like the new direction that she's taking.
It makes sense for her to be like, I need to do something physical to keep Jean-Marie at bay.
Yeah.
Although someone calls her Jean-Marie, Jean-Marie, I think in this issue and definitely in the next issue, and she doesn't take offense to it like I thought she would have.
And, I'm having to get Asta away from eating part of a rug, as you do.
It's true. You do that. I will regale dear reader with the latest fun update. Clyde is doing wonderfully. We took him to the vet for a second opinion on his spotting issues, and apparently it just might be a thing that he does. He's Angora. We're doing the things right for like keeping his weight up because they put a lot of energy into growing fur, and he's very furry now.
Yes.
Very adorable. But still spotting, but the vet visit went great.
Yes.
And for Nick and Nora downstairs, they had an old hay box that they had chewed the walls through. So it was like a fun, gigantic Heidi palace for them.
Mm-hmm.
I had put it by the trunk and there was a little carpet square that I had put in there. I looked in it the other day and they had ripped it to shreds, like carpet, shade carpet. And so much was ripped out. It used to be a square and then it was a corner was just gone.
Ugh.
So I don't know how that hasn't blocked up their systems.
Right. Obviously, they digested some polyester.
Oh, so much polyester. So it's gone. It's gone. The box is gone. The carpet's gone. But they just go after carpet sometimes.
They do. All right. Issue 25, entitled ... And Graves Give Up Their Dead.
On the cover, there's an outline. It's like, but he's dead, isn't he?
We don't know who, because so many people have died.
It's true. Like, it could be Walter, it could be Mac, and you open the page and it's Northstar. Like, what's, why is he in the same sort of pose as the dead person on the cover?
We have our same creative team as the previous issue. Additional credit to Bill Mantlo for creative kibitzing. So Bill Mantlo is going to be the writer for this series starting in a few issues. So they brought him in to like toss some ideas around, it seems like.
That makes sense. Like, do the baton passing slowly.
Yep.
And Northstar, how do you plead? And it's Northstar, Shaman, Heather, Roger Box, and Walter Box, and Aurora. And the shade that's being thrown around in these first few pages is so delicious.
So he's being put on trial, quote unquote, for his terrorist past.
Yeah.
Because Aurora, if you recall from the Pink Pearl issue, found out, and she was like, I'm not letting this go.
Yeah.
So she has basically narked to the team.
That he used to be, like, planted bombs.
Yes.
So, it's, the dialogue.
Northstar.
Is this a trial, then? If so, I see no one here whom I acknowledge to have the authority to pass judgment over me. And Heather, like, is trying to calm him down. Meanwhile, Aurora's face and just, like, sitting back enjoying the show. Hilarious. And Northstar deflects. Alpha Flight has more than its fair share of secrets. What's considered the truth and what's not? And Box is, like, trying to stay on point. Northstar's like, I don't even know you.
Yeah.
So Shaman's got Roger's back. And like, we get a panel of Heather and Aurora. And Aurora's just like, interesting. Like, loving it. You've got some serious black marks in your past, quite possibly crimes of a most reprehensible nature. Do you wish to say anything to deny Jean-Marie's charges? If so, this is not the time for ego. And then Northstar goes off. I'm like, well, who made you leader? I've done some things I'm not proud of. It's true, but I believed in something. Something I once thought worth fighting for, even worth dying for. Is that an egotistical act? And Heather's like, shut up.
Yeah.
But Puck comes in.
Yeah, Puck interrupts this very tense group meeting and is like, so Caliber?
From a few issues ago, he's back. He's got his armor back. But seriously, when you do the socials posts for these, like, you have to have Aurora's face in the background for what's happening with Jean-Paul.
And the interesting thing is that Caliber is downtown battling with Guardian?
With Guardian.
What?
And Talisman is just chatting up one of the police people who has a very large rifle.
And she's trying to figure out what's going on.
We had the creep nice and locked away with his armor on the other side of town. We don't know how he got out or how he got his stuff.
Yeah, someone broke him out and reunited him with his suit.
Yeah, so Talisman is sort of the character that gives us that can't really be Guardian. Like, she didn't know him, but this is what I heard. He combusted into something less than ash.
Talisman really moves past the how of Caliber is here, and she's like, whatever, I just know he needs to be taken care of.
She does it by herself. Like, I don't know where the rest of the team is. But Caliber is like, you won't catch me like you did last time. I've prepared defenses against Aurora. And Talisman has been leveling up. She's been working beyond just
working
grappling
out
with Puck. Yes. So she's like, well, my dad says there's magic in the world all around me. What if I tap into that? And she creates these, like, green globules in her hands and throws them at Caliber, who's like, what? I shot them. Hey. And the globules, like, take apart his armor, and he's just left in his underwear and socks.
And Talisman is like, you can take care of this, fellas, right? You just arrest him.
Yeah.
And then Guardian lands and introduces himself to Talisman, and she's like, I know you by name. Yes. Familiar with the concept of you. And the rest of the team shows up.
Way later than she's Talon should have been like, okay, team, I did it. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
And Heather goes up and is like, who are you? How sort of a how dare you? Like, is that really you, Mac? And he's like, it's me. I'm going to make out with you. And it's a full page of them thrusting their heterosexual lifestyle in our faces.
They kiss, but then Heather wakes up on a couch. So this is
chapter two.
Chapter two. Within three issues, the concept of Mac has laid her low twice where she needs to rest.
Yeah. Like this, the emotional trauma of having seen him in the street running away from her, and now he's back and he kissed her.
So Shaman and Guardian are there. She fainted after the kiss.
And he's like, ha, you always said I was a good kisser, didn't you?
And this is where we get exposition.
I love exposition.
All right. So, oh my.
So he's in the suit, like flashback to the battle with Omega Flight.
Issue 12.
And he's like, I had 9 seconds left. I didn't know what I was going to do. In 0.7 seconds, I came up with a plan to turn the suit's energies in on itself and rip the hole in the space-time continuum. And so he did, and we got like a very Vertigo, the movie, not the ex-villain, panel of him like falling through space. And he lands on Ganymede, the moon of Jupiter.
You like, love space.
I do love space. And so like he looks up and there's the big red spot. And he is like, I can't breathe here. This is outer space.
But don't worry, an alien race called the Quirln.
I mean, it took Mac like years to figure out how to pronounce the Quirln,
which is so hard to describe this aspect of his history because it's so fucking weird and out there.
Yeah. So like he thought he died in the explosion and then he sort of died on the surface. But then he woke up with these like big brains in jars who are living in the oceans of Ganymede, which did they know that about Ganymede in the 80s?
I don't know. That's a you question.
Because
you would need to provide the background on that.
I mean, it's Europa is most famous for having oceans of one of Jupiter's moons. And I think it's Enceladus around Saturn that has the water volcanoes. But there are special things about Ganymede. It might be that its surface is cracking, like it's got a frozen ocean underneath, that the gravity of Jupiter keeps like tugging and creating those cracks.
Oh.
Or there's something else about volcanoes and picking up stuff.
So the Quirln,
they
nursed him back to health.
Yeah, they lots of tentacles.
Yes.
Red eyes, sort of like a dome over their brains. And it's a remarkable civilization spread throughout the crust of the moon. They saved his life, literally repaired him. He's got like a dome over his head and like a golden suit. Very clunky looking, but seems happy. And the Quirln are just sort of cute.
And he's like, I want to go back home to Earth. And they're like, okay.
Like, look at those little fangs.
Yeah.
It's got little baby fangs.
They're like, we'll send you back to Earth. Don't you worry.
We don't know how.
And then...
But also, like, he says he'd always flattered himself that he had no lurking xenophobia to trip over if he ever happened to encounter an alien race. But I never had expected the kind of warm, almost loving relationship that developed between myself and the Quirln. Those tentacles were going places.
So he then finds out that actually he not only went through space, he went through time. Earth is still in prehistory.
Yeah, like the pyramids of Giza are still being built. But also like they all cried when he was like, I need to go home. That's nice.
Yeah.
So
they help him again.
They put him in suspended animation for 10,000 years.
Yes, as you do. And he wakes up and he finds that they had been engaged in a world war of their own.
And they bombed themselves back into the Stone Age.
Yes.
Which is super sad.
But don't worry, they left him a spaceship.
They did. And that the emotional turmoil, he had one long moment of utter black bottomless despair. But it shall be unfounded. My friends had destroyed themselves, but they had not failed me. Like that, but it's got to be sad. Like, he loved those tentacled brains. Like they had a thing going. They had their own thruple. He was the Wolverine.
It was a polycule with the entire planet.
Yes.
So he crashed onto Earth, found himself on the shore of British Columbia.
The poor, like, the
Ganymede. Broke into a cabin.
The ship dissolved, and so did the suit that was his space suit, all dissolved in the water, which I guess is a good way of doing it. He was naked, but they don't show us that, sadly.
He found some mothballed clothes that fit him.
So that smelled terrible. Made his way to Vancouver, and that's when he saw Heather, but he couldn't bring himself to face her, realizing how long it had been since his death and the changes in my life and yours.
He's like, she probably moved on, so...
And she's like, you jerk, I loved you. I gave my life, like, you were my life.
Yeah.
Because I was 17 when we got married. And he's like, Heather... He rips off his suit, and he's half mechanics, half bio, because the Quarrelin didn't quite know what to make of
where
him.
Where his suit ended and where his body began, so they sort of thought his bio suit was a part of his skin.
So they improvised. So we get him with his skivvies, all shiny. And like
he is a cyborg, basically.
Yeah, like his abs are metallic, and one of his arms is mostly one of his calves. Like, it's very well done to make it look sinuous. Mm-hmm. Like, the mechanical parts look like sinews. Like, better than the Borg,
yeah.
I would say. So, that's where we leave them. Meanwhile, outside, Walter's trying out the box body, and Roger's like, hey, be careful, we haven't had a proper shakedown. And Aurora's there, like, what kind of fun, Cher Walter, corked in a machine like that can you have? And Walter's like, but hey, it's still me, you love me for my mind, don't you?
And she's like,
don't you?
She's like, I need to think about it.
She is.
Bye. She just flies away.
She's like, okay, bye. And
Roger's like, you know, Walter, Aurora needs physical satisfaction, and that requires a human body. Like, but I think I know where we can find one for you.
And Walter is like, well, ain't that the kick in the head? Here I am, trying to adjust to the kind of trauma that would put 10 normal men in a rubber room, and she has to go and hit me with that little emotional haymaker. But seriously, I mean, Aurora's a girl's got to eat.
Yes.
And Walter was a hunk.
He was.
But still, like, that's cold just to fly away when he's like, but you still love me, don't you?
She's like, I gotta go.
Okay, bye.
In the letters page, there is a lot of North Star love. There's only one letter talking about Jean-Paul, but editorial responds and says they get a lot of fan letters expressing enthusiasm for it, for him. And the tease at the end of the column is that John Byrne has cooked up something absolutely stunning for the next issue. Quote, the most interesting issue yet, which says a whole lot.
No.
That's a big promise.
It is. There's something in here of like, Heather was a bad choice to become leader of Alpha Flight. North Star should have been the leader. Like, no, you're just, that's silly.
Yeah. Do you, have you read that character before? Because he doesn't seem like team leader.
Nothing around a team is something that North Star would be interested in.
So,
I like this issue. I like the little tentacle brains and a little sexy times that they were having with Mac. But the fact that they were also like, yeah, we are just brains with tentacles, but we are super peaceful and awesome and have the technology to put you in suspended animation. And the tragedy of them, like that civilization being lost to war.
Yeah. So it's award seasons right now. The Academy Awards are airing tonight. Let's give some awards out for these three issues. So who has the best special effects?
I really like Talisman's blobs to destroy the armor off of Calibur.
Okay.
That was cool.
I sort of like Snowbird.
And her transformations and yep. the little skull in her eye.
Yes.
Who would win between her and Mystique?
Snowbird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Mostly because I don't like Mystique and I like Snowbird.
Fair. Best actor.
Aurora for like the background facial expressions, you know, she was making during that trial of Northstar at the beginning of that last issue. Yeah. Plus like the camp drama of just throwing herself onto Walter's body of like, it's very, the woman from the top of the building during the intro credits for Mystery on PBS, where she's like, oh, oh, and like the handkerchief goes flying off. Like, it was that level of melodrama. Mm. Well, might need to edit that sound out that I just made.
No, nope, we don't edit the show. You
it's very Paul Bearer coded.
All right, then what about best writing?
Between the three issues?
Yep. Tightest storytelling.
I think getting Walter's soul.
Okay.
I like there's a lot happening to keep track of, like who was dealing with which beast, mm-hmm. like all the exposition that was given from Soman and Narya. Yeah, okay. I like that one. What about you?
It's not that issue for me. That was a double size issue and I feel it didn't need to be double sized.
Oh.
Yeah.
But we like different things.
We do. I appreciated the writing in the third issue we covered.
Okay.
Just with the backstory to explain how the fuck Mac is alive.
Yeah.
Weird choice for Byrne to write Mac back into the book. Because if you then reference the article that I read that he gave to a magazine before issue one even came out, he knew he was killing off Mac. He didn't say who was going to die, but he says someone dies in issue 12 and you will not expect it.
Oh,
he planned from the beginning to kill that character off. So it's interesting that Mac is back.
Were there,
and the manner in which he was saved.
Yeah, it's a lot of, it's Stargate level complications.
Yes.
But were there other people that were like, yeah, Heather shouldn't be the leader?
Oh, throughout the course of her leadership. That sticks around for dozens of issues in terms of letters being written in.
I feel like she didn't have the chance to really shine as team leader and like make some of the big calls.
Yeah.
That turn out.
And in the self same article, Byrne even says Mac's wife is actually the leader.
No.
Like, it was fully intentional that she should be the leader before issue one was even published. So I would say that third issue is the best writing just because of the mental gymnastics that John Byrne had to put himself through to justify Mac being back. An alien race, Ganymede, time travel.
Yeah. I mean, it is a hole in the space-time continuum, and it's sort of a cheat if you don't change both of those things.
Yeah.
So
you can't have one or the other.
Right. That would have been too easy.
Yep.
So,
and
best acting,
we already sort of did best actor.
I thought you you agree with that, Aurora?
Or Snowbird.
No,
Snowbird, especially in issue 23, yes, issue 23, where she just kills Walter.
Yes,
so.
I mean, she was being tortured.
And then at the end of the issue?
Well, she's just hiding behind a door.
She was. Teach me how to be a woman.
Oh,
very melodramatic, but very pukey.
Would a woman ever write something like that?
No. Absolutely not. I've been interviewing folks for this book, as you know. I know that John Byrne will never consent to one because I would have so many questions that would piss him off so bad that he would end the interview. Like,
tell us about your internalized sexism.
Yes. Tell us about why underage women keep getting with men.
Yeah.
Just what's going on here, buddy? What's happening here? But taking the character for what it is, aside from the last panel where she's like, bone me, Doug Thompson.
Ooh.
Just the way in which she needs to fulfill her mission.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At the expense of her friend, Walter.
Yeah.
I think that that is something that was interesting. It's a good story element.
Okay.
Where the team, you think of a team as cohesive. And where I am in my current write-ups, where I'm almost to the end of the series, you're getting more people writing in about the team and how people are upset. People legit get upset when there's a focus on only one or two team members in an issue.
Oh, but...
And they write in and they're like, this is a team book. If you go back to where Byrne started everything, this was never a team book. He just knew he could never have a series focused on Aurora. He knew he could never have a series focused on Northstar. Like, he was able to structure a book where you're able to explore different characters within the auspice of a title. Alpha Flight was always meant to get together as a team once a year. And that's it. They're only going to combine forces about once a year, but otherwise you're going to see different combos.
I like the different combos because it gave you a depth of character and like an exploration of who they are, what their motivations are, like all sorts of fun stuff like that.
And this is where that comes into play in his take on what this book is. Yeah, they're a team. Yeah, they're friends. But Aurora, or not Aurora, Snowbird has her own dedicated mission that her life is founded on.
Yeah.
And it is eliminating the great beasts. And she recognizes that and knows that the sacrifice of her friend, she needs to carry out her mission. That at its core is character-driven writing.
Yeah.
It is not plot-driven, because if you're writing this book for the plot, and later writers do, and we're going to get really deep in the weeds in terms of some very plot-driven rather than character-driven arcs.
Oh.
You write it differently. You wouldn't take necessarily Walter Lankowski, beloved character, off the board if you were writing it for the plot. You would have figured out a different way where they could face a big bad together and they overcome it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have seeded that Sasquatch is really one of the great beasts that needs to be defeated. And Tanaarak was just like slowly wedging that door open each time Walter used his power.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have written a weird thing where the gamma experiment wasn't actually a gamma experiment as we understand it with the Hulk. And then She-Hulk, it's totally different. And that's why Sasquatch is not green.
Oh.
It's an actual reason.
So is he really an expert on gamma radiation?
No, I don't think so.
Like the way that everyone thinks that he should be?
Yeah, I don't think so. So, any other thoughts on these three issues?
I thought they were good. I liked them.
We're headed into the last of Byrne.
Yeah. Asta was not excited. She was fully roll flopped, and then she had an itch, and now she's just a loaf.
Yeah.
In the bun bun update.
Afternoon. So let us know what you think of these three issues, the really stunning revelations and the missions that the teams went on. There's a lot packed into these three.
I like it.
Yeah. And we will see you later. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Be well.
Bye.